What up, Long Beach? Welcome back to Sports Night, the one and only place in Long Beach to talk Long Beach sports, brought to you by GazetteSports.com and hosted by three guys who are just gosh darn thankful for high school football playoffs, and we get another week of it this week. And that's what we're talking about on Sports Night. As always, I am co-sports editor of GazetteSports.com, JJ Fiddler, to my left.
Co-sports editor Mike Gardabasio. I would like to really quick drop a PSA. You are allowed to talk about Long Beach sports, like if you're in your car and it strikes you. You just can't listen to professionals talk about it. To our far right,
just right here,
wearing the red hat today.
What's up? I'm not the co-sports editor, but I am Tyler Hendrickson. What's up?
Tyler, Mike, JJ, like I said, we are very excited for football this week.
Can't you tell?
Earlier in the season, we gotta be honest with you, did not think that we would be going to a local high school football practice on Thanksgiving, but we will be, and we'll be talking about this week on Sports Night. Usually we do three different topics. We're just gonna use all three topics to talk about the big game at Vets Friday night, Pac-5 semifinal between Pauly and St. John Bosco. But we could not do all of the build-up this show, and then obviously the coverage of that big game, without our big-time sponsors.
Naples Rib Co. and the Naples Island Car Wash. You can go check out their ad for a discount on either the hand wash or your lunch items at Naples Rib Co. Of course, McCarty's Jewelry, here for you since 1932.
Don't forget about Performance Vein Institute of Los Alamitos. Friedman's Appliances, where the Sleep Center is now all the way open.
I could have used that at about 4 a.m. on Saturday night.
Yeah, our Sleep Center is like pretty delayed when we're covering high school football. It's definitely askewed to the later wee hours. And, of course, Care Jones, let him help you save, State Farm agent, who looks very well-rested in his photo.
He does, the Care Bear looking fresh.
If you want to get yourself or your business listed on that exclusive list of sponsors, hit the contact button on the right side at the top there of GazetteSports.com, and it will get in touch with us. You can also get in touch with us by just leaving a comment on any story, and we just might read it on this show. Like we said, this show dedicated to this game on Friday night, but you cannot go forward without first looking back. This season for the 2012 version of Pauly Jackrabbit football has been tumultuous. It's been disappointing at times. It's been maybe even overachieving at times. But at the end of the day, as much as we wanted to talk about where this team is going or coming from, they're still in the semifinal. First time since 2008, but not the year where you would expect it. When you went through the, what do you want to call it? The tough non-conference, non-league schedule?
That's what Chris Ruiz would call it, that's for sure.
Yeah. It was tough.
It was hashtag real tough.
It was a very tough non-league schedule. Now, it's worth pointing out that everybody Pauly played is still playing football, which I think is really interesting. All four teams made it to at least the semifinals. Narbonne, Sarah, Carson, and Bakersfield are all still going. So certainly that 1-3 start, you give them a little tip of the cap for that.
Carson's a shocker, by the way. I don't know if anybody else was as surprised.
Anyone who saw him in the first week against Pauly is pretty surprised.
Carson
took
some of their lumps.
Yeah.
And let's not mask over the fact. It's like, this is not the same Pauly team that started the season.
No.
No, we are not trying to say that. This is...
Real fast, how much does this Pauly team beat that Pauly team by?
Ooh. 56-0. I mean, but you make a good point. And I mean, I think you have to give Coach Ryle Lahr and his staff a lot of credit, because we talked all Moore League season. Well, can't tell if they're getting better because they're not playing top-level football teams. They're not really even playing middle-level Pac-5 football teams.
But we had the feeling that they were getting better.
Because what
we saw
did,
some of the things, and in practice you could see it. And I think that kind of taking the behind-the-scenes approach a little bit, which we are able to do,
right,
and it's awesome, we did see improvements. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
Well, that was what gave them and sort of us as prognosticators a little more confidence going into their playoff run, because we were like, this Pauly team has really turned a corner.
We had way more confidence than any other media in Southern California. I think that's safe to say.
And certainly, confidence, I think, has a big part to do with it. Execution is one thing, but you can't execute without confidence. And that Pauly team was walking around during the non-league schedule without a lot of confidence. As soon as they got going in the Moore League, man, you could just tell the way they ran onto the field that it was a different team, let alone the final score.
Well, and you know, even more than just that they were beating up on league teams, I think you've got to give the coaching staff credit for that as well. What they did during that Moore League stretch was to break everything down to basics, really focus on fundamental approaches to what they were doing. You're going to put your hand here. You're going to put your hip here. You're going to swivel your hips this way. And you can see how much more they grasp what they're doing out there. Because that's the thing I think always with Pauly is they're always going to be superior or equal in terms of athleticism and playmaking ability. So it's, can you put them in a system where they can fulfill their responsibilities, number one, without breaking everything down, and then have the freedom to go and make those plays? And I think that's what we've seen on offense. The stretch plays they're running with the running backs, with the skill of their wide receivers at blocking, they let those guys get out there and in space. And then Montesmo Luga is going to make a play. Gerard Wicks is going to make a play. And I really commend them, because you don't often see coaches completely change their systems and their coaching styles after week four.
But they needed it, and it has certainly worked. And you're right, you got to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff. And I think this season specifically gives merit to the conversation that we have a lot with fans or whoever, just talking about, I think, specifically Pauly football. They can win every game that they're in, more often than not. But they could also find themselves having a disappointing end to the season. And I think that the talent, like you mentioned, Mike, is kind of always there at a certain level.
Right.
But it just kind of takes...
And this is not the most talented team, certainly.
No, certainly not. But it certainly takes the, you know, togetherness as a team and having things click the right way. And when someone asks you in the beginning of the season, so what's Pauly going to do this year? I mean, they could win
right.
the Pac-5 title and the state championship because they have the talent, but they could also just try to do too much and go out in the first round of the playoffs. And you're not wrong in either time.
Now, before those playoffs, you do have to get through the league schedule, and like Mike mentioned, and like we've mentioned pretty much every time we do this show about Moore League football, that it was a little bit down this year. And yes, you saw the results in the Pac-5 playoffs reflected that, as well as the non-league schedules and non-league records of these teams. But I think Pauly was better for Lakewood and Wilson thinking that they had a chance in those games. If Lakewood and Wilson come into those games against Pauly at Veterans Stadium, and they just come in ready to roll over, we don't really need to play this game. I mean, yeah, it kind of used to be a rivalry, but no big deal. I don't think that this Pauly team would have gotten that confidence from pretty much smacking down the two teams that thought they were their rivals. Well, some tradition-based, some recently-based. You know, those two teams really thought they had a chance, and Pauly pretty much said the nay-no to both teams in a rivalry setting. One saying that this is no rivalry, and the other one saying, well, you know, this used to be a rivalry, it isn't anymore. Again, speaking to that confidence, without those other teams being a little bit confident mm-hmm. for Pauly to get those wins and then roll that into the playoffs, I think, yeah, the Moore League didn't help Pauly win in the playoffs, but it definitely helped them get their mind right.
Well, I think that's a fair point. I think it gave Pauly a little more confidence, thinking like, you know, we beat a team that thought they could beat us.
A chip on their shoulder, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think instead of going in and being like, well, it's just the Moore League, like, and they didn't come to play. It's like they knew that Lakewood and Wilson wanted to come compete with them. They said as much. They said they wanted to come, you know, spoil the party and win that game. And, you know, that's, they should have thought, go and compete, because you're not going to win if you don't think you're going to win.
Right.
And so, but
you play to win the game.
Of course. So I think it definitely did help Pauly sort of to feel like this was a competitive game. We won by a lot. We're getting better. Instead of thinking, well, yeah, we won by a lot, but
and just waiting for the playoffs to start.
We were expecting to win. Yeah, exactly.
I'd almost add another point to that. I think certainly maybe less the confidence they came into the game with, but the way that the confidence manifested itself in crap talking may have had more to do with it than the attitude with which they took the field, if you know what I mean. The Pauly kids focused more on those games during those weeks. Like, they were focused for the Compton game because they were 1-3. They're focused for the Lakewood and Wilson games because they were
rivalries. Because they were challenged.
Well, specifically because those kids were saying, you know, well, we're going to beat Pauly, we're going to do this. And then you look at the other games. Okay, Jordan game, not really their best foot forward. Definitely safe to say that. You know, the Milliken game, not really their best foot forward in terms of focus and preparation. But it is worth saying, I do think, talking to the coaches, if those teams had been better, more time would have been spent in those weeks preparing for them than working on themselves. Because they basically got 6 weeks where they could really focus on themselves, and almost like a bye week. And when does a football team really get that opportunity? You know, they really even, for their bye week, they were breaking down a Trinity League film. You know, let's prepare as if we're going to play a Pac-5 team this week, and then when the week comes, okay, we'll go back to making sure you understand how to run this play and this play.
Well, that practice worked, because when they rolled into the playoffs, especially in that first week against Almont at Veterans Stadium, they did look like a different team, even from the last week of the regular season to the first week of the playoffs. Mike, you speak about that focus, and they were focused on the running game.
Yeah, they've been focused on it since the playoffs started. It's been 4-1 on play calling, run versus pass. I think a lot of Poly fans very grateful for that. You do have to give credit. Brent Perez, the offensive line coach, and Raul Lara has been working with those kids too. Alfred Rowe, the father of the Rowe family that's gone through Poly. They really dialed in with the offensive line, and having been at the Narbonne game, the Sarah game, especially the Carson game, this offensive line is the most improved unit from start to end of a season that I maybe can think of ever seeing in the last 5 years in Long Beach, because these guys couldn't block Carson kids who were half their size 10 mm-hmm. weeks ago. And then last week they go down to Mission Viejo, kind of manhandle a school that traditionally has had very good linemen. They have one D1 guy this year, and they average 6.5 yards a carry. I mean, that's a light year improvement.
Is that scheme? Is it scheme or is it blocking attitude?
It's technique, and then I think it's simplifying the scheme, but it's definitely technique. I mean, the kids just didn't know how to block in the first week of the season. You know what I mean? Now, and what's exciting, I think, if you're a Poly fan, there's not one senior on that offensive line. All of those kids are coming back, you know, and they're coming back with that much more skill, and obviously now they've had the playoff experience.
And certainly props to the running backs for Poly, but if you say, yeah, but they're losing their top two running backs.
I'm less worried about that.
Must be new to Poly football.
Yeah, you're usually not too worried about replacing the skill positions. It's just, do you have the line to give them the opportunity?
So that all brings us to this last Friday night, Poly at Mission Viejo. The build-up that we put on the website beat you over the head with the fact that the Jackrabbits had never beaten Mission Viejo. Obviously, that's a huge deal because it's Poly and it's the Pac-5, and they play all of these teams. So with all the disrespect coming from all angles at the Poly program because of that, you know, unsuccessful non-league schedule, the disrespect that came to the Moore League and then therefore to the Moore League champion headed into the playoffs, and just the disrespect in that week coming up to Mission Viejo playing those undefeated Diablos, the Jackrabbits went down there and literally got the monkey off their back. If you have not done so yet,
not literally,
get down to GazetteSports.com for the behind-the-scenes story of Poly and Mission Viejo that Mike did from last Friday's game. Kind of just a close-up shot of dogs with a wide-angle lens. A wide-angle lens of this whole situation and what it really meant, not just for Poly, but for high school football, really.
Well, and if you've been listening to this show, you got some of that behind the scenes last week when we talked about kind of the racial stuff that sometimes goes on in those games. Because in that article, that's the first time I think we'd ever acknowledged that that's an issue or written about it. And to be honest, I can't think of a time that's happened generally in those games. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we talked about it on the podcast. Sure enough, in the game, it was an issue.
Very early.
relatively apparently, if you're standing on the sideline, as it usually is.
Well, and in the crowd, I mean, there were references to it, and you just knew that it was going on.
But we talked about it in the article. I mean, I think it's a lesson that I find really unfortunate that kids have to learn in high school football that, you know, oh, they're going to say that to you, and there's nothing you can do about it. So what you need to do is find a way to rise above saying stuff like that. Now, anyone who's, you know, been through any kind of a difficulty in their life, whether that's racial or whatever, understands, well, that's a valuable lesson to learn. You don't necessarily think a 16-year-old kid on a football field should have to learn it, but it does end up being a major life lesson, I feel.
It is, and it's unfortunate because the CIF, you know, talks about character and things like that, and you never want to see that type of stuff. You know, trash talk is part of football and getting your team pumped up, but certainly there's a line that you don't want to see crossed, and it's worked. For teams that do that, you do get the penalties sometimes, but how much does it inspire the other team? And you just have to focus
What are you teaching your kids?
Well, that too, certainly. But, you know, but you can use it as positive inspiration to play harder, block harder, and go out and win, because the best revenge is ending that person's season.
Right.
And Poly is now 1-0 against Mission Viejo in the playoffs, when it really matters.
It is worth noting, by the way, when we're talking about stuff that doesn't necessarily have a spot on the website, Bob Johnson did not shake hands after that game. Mission Viejo head coach, which, to be honest, I was really disappointed and surprised by. You know, here's a guy who's never lost to Pauley. Raul Lara has gone and shaken his hand every single time he's beaten him. You know, if you're a head coach and you're trying to set an example for your kids, go shake hands.
Pauley won that game with Pauley football, too. I think that has to be noted. They didn't do it out there running gimmicks or fake plays or anything.
That's a great point.
They ran the ball. They played good,
no
solid,
fake punts for Pauley.
Opportunistic defense, and it ended up being defensive plays down the stretch that helped them hold on to that lead. That run through the 2008 playoffs, where they literally came back every fourth quarter, it reminded me of those games.
Well, and it was kind of a vintage Pauley win. You know, they ran the ball, dominated in that aspect of the game, played great defense. It was close at the end, but they made the plays and got the sacks when they needed them. And, you know, they showed some of their explosiveness in special teams. But at the same time, there was always the tease of, yeah, but if they could just eliminate the penalties, or, you know, if they could kind of figure out that, you know, there have been some comments about, you know, the substitution patterns and things like that, and some confusion on the sidelines and stuff. But let's also look at the fact that Pauley didn't turn the ball over.
Right.
You know, and it's like, that
two turnovers to zero is a margin that they will take.
That's pretty big time. And so,
and the first turnover changed the game.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, that directly led to a touchdown. David Price with the rip on Ah Real Monster, in order to set up the Jackrabbits in the red zone. And so, you know, that was a really key touchdown to give them their lead right there, a lead that they would never give back.
Right. And so, you know, certainly we take our hats off. I just want to take this opportunity before we move on. To us, to the three of us, I think high school sports coverage is always about giving credit to kids, building up kids and communities. And this year with this Long Beach Pauley team, I think we've seen that a lot of other people think what it's about is who can be the cutest and say the worst thing about high school kids who are struggling or who aren't going through the thing.
And not just that, but they treat it as a different level.
Absolutely.
There is no separation of level. You talk about NFL football differently than you talk about college football, differently
Absolutely.
Than you talk
mm-hmm.
about high school football.
And just because some of these teams are spending money now like it's Division I college football, it isn't. And so I thought some of the stuff that was said was really gutless. I thought it's even more gutless that the people who made those comments did not retract them or give any credit to the kids for pulling this upset off. We were really, I personally really bothered by it. To me, it's the opposite of what high school sports coverage is supposed to be out. You know, maybe it did its job, because certainly the kids talked about it a lot last week. It was all anybody was talking about at practice last week was, you know, F that guy for saying that. I guess we showed him wrong. F this guy for saying this. So it certainly did provide motivation. Obviously now they're moving on to a game against another good team. But suddenly you're not hearing people coming out of the woodwork to talk crap about Pauley anymore.
And they're on television this week. That Bosco game is going to be televised.
It was so many people, too. It wasn't just one person or one group or one media outlet. How many people are involved in, and I think we're all talking about two very specific shows that are on television and on the internet, how many people involved in both of those shows just kind of forgot that they called out Pauley?
Well, and
they just kind of forgot this week. It was just like, oh yeah, now we're just moving on to this next week.
And didn't even
don't worry about what happened last week, or even mention the fact that game happened last week.
Well, and you know, high school spotlight on Fox Sports at least, you know, talked about the Pauley game. I certainly, you know, the person I think who is the greatest offender, you'd have to look at Petros Papadakis, who they literally showed highlights from the three other quarterfinal games,
but
on the NBC show. They didn't show the Pauley game. He never apologized. He never mentioned anything about it. For a guy who represents himself as being a certain kind of guy, I thought that was a very telling character showing.
Yeah, do your job across the board.
Well, yeah, come on, Pete. And all he had to say was, and hey, got to give a quick congratulations to Pauley. They proved me wrong last week.
And he's done that so many times on the radio.
What would that have cost him to do that?
Yeah,
are you so prideful that you couldn't say that and give the kids the credit they deserve?
He is the master of self-deprecation.
Exactly, and so that's why I don't understand why it didn't happen. It was kind of a puzzling thing.
Yeah, Fred Rogan, also, step your game up.
Yeah, maybe we should try to get them on the show next.
Yeah, get a different co-host, Fred.
Come on, guys. So that was pretty much everything you needed to know about the Pauley Jackrabbits and their road to this semifinal, taking on the St. John Bosco Braves, Veterans Stadium, 7 p.m. on Friday. Let's take a moment to talk about those Braves and the fact that they are not your father's Braves. if that makes any sense.
They're not even your older brother's Braves, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's not Fred McGriff and Javi Lopez out there. You know, this is a different
Terry
brand.
Pendleton.
Oh, yeah, a little Marquise Grissom out there. Old school David Justice with the chain hanging out. We are going way too baseball with this, and I apologize.
The Braves are 7-4 with an asterisk next to the 4. They're actually 11-0 on the field. It's 12-0 on the field now with four forfeit losses. In their third year under head coach Jason Negro, who has, I mean, you can't really even describe what he's been able to do for this program. I mean, his third year as a head coach, they win their first ever Trinity League championship. They beat Mater Dei for the second time in 3 years, which I know for a fact has his alumni base happy. You know, he's come in and really changed the culture of the program, for sure.
Well, and a lot of things have changed at Bosco. It's really been...
To say the least, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of been a huge culture shift, and they've decided to be one of the teams that competes in the Trinity League. You don't want to say by any means necessary, but there's been an investment in doing that, and now it's a destination for a lot of transfers and some key ones out of the Moore League.
It's a three-step process for a private school to take their football team, or any team for that matter, to the next level. One, spend money on it. Two, use some of that money for a lot of coaches, specifically a good head coach. And three, get transfers to come in. Bosco did that in that order, and it's worked.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, if you're looking at results, you certainly have to give them credit. What's interesting, and sort of similar to, you know, what we talked about with the culture differences in Poly Mission Viejo, I think on this show we can talk a little more honestly about some of these differences we're seeing at Bosco. Bosco was always the private school that wasn't really a private school. You know, they were sort of the team that valued other things over winning a little bit more. You know, Kiki Mendoza was a football coach who I think personally represented that a lot. And obviously the Mendoza family is pretty active and busy in Long Beach. When they fired him, that kind of seemed to signal 3 years ago that they were changing the way they were doing things. And knowing people involved in the campus over there, you can say, I mean, even the day-to-day life on campus is different. But certainly athletics is being accented in a much different way than it used to be there.
I think they were kind of comfortable being the little guy athletically a little bit.
You can take pride in that.
And they certainly had their sports that they were great at.
Soccer.
And still are.
Fantastic.
Cross country, wrestling. Yeah.
And they still had tradition and everything, but certainly they were not comfortable with losing, but they just knew, like, hey, we're not Mater Dei. We're not going to be like Mater Dei, as an example.
Well, they took pride in it. They took pride in the fact that they weren't going to be like Mater Dei and get transfers from 60 miles away and things like that. I mean, that was something that people would say, I'd love to beat those guys, but that's okay because we're doing things the right way.
And no judgment necessarily. I mean, they had the opportunity to invest in trying to go out and win, and it has worked.
That's the decision that they made. That's the decision you make when you hire somebody to be your, not your recruiter, but to be a representative to where you go to other cities and watch football and try to get kids to come to your school, because you can do that.
Not for athletic reasons.
Can't do that as a public school.
Right.
You can't go out and watch Pop Warner football as a
public
school.
Well, you know, I mean, you can, but it helps if you've got a teaching job on campus. You know, I mean, certainly we've had guys who were adept at doing that in the Moore League in the past. But, yeah, I mean, this is traditionally, again, Tyler, you're right. We're not passing any kind of judgment. It's just simple to say, traditionally, this was not a school that did that. You know, we did not see three kids from one Moore League school like Lakewood go to Bosco 7 years ago.
Right? Yeah, those three kids who went from Lakewood to St. John Bosco in the offseason got to play immediately when they got there, and they are Jaleel Wadud, Nigel Hale, and Chandler Lanoue. And wouldn't you know it, Wadud and Hale are leading that secondary, a opportunistic secondary, and Chandler Lanoue leads the whole entire team in tackles. He's got 142 tackles this year.
More than double the next...
All three of those guys juniors, and it, like I said, it's not a coincidence that, you know, big-time players are going to the programs that are trying to be big-time.
That's a good way of putting it, you know. And again, obviously, you know, with the way things are set up in CIF, there's no acknowledgement that any of this is for athletic reasons. That's not legal, but... You know, these guys have ended up in a situation that if you look at what Lakewood did this year and you look at what Bosco did, if you're hoping to play Division I football, you can't call it a bad decision, really. It's just locally, you feel it in a different way than if you were in Illinois and someone told you three kids went from one high school to another high school where they're probably more likely to get a scholarship.
Yeah.
And you don't think Ray Price is on those Poly sidelines just really wanting this game to go Poly's way right now?
Yeah, there's two. The Price brothers at Poly are there. As some of the priorities have shifted at Bosco, some of the obligations, commitments on scholarships and things like that change. Poly's got two kids who used to be at Bosco under what I would say are pretty comfortably different circumstances.
Right.
So, to put it politely. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be quite an interesting... I'm interested to see what the emotion is like. Because there's never any bad blood between Hale, Wadud, Lanou, and Poly that I saw. Certainly Nigel Hale knows pretty much all the Poly kids. You know, he's Nate Dogg's son, obviously a big fixture in the Poly community. So there always seemed to be kind of a camaraderie with those guys. And I doubt that we'll see from the team at large that kind of like, let's go show them that they should have stayed in the Moore League. But it is going to be interesting. It could kind of go in a lot of different directions.
Right, and it's strange because, you know, Bosco's close, obviously, just up in Bellflower, but there's just really never been too much of a rivalry between these schools. It's brewing now.
Yes.
It's starting to brew now, but they just don't meet too much in any capacity, and it would be a really interesting rivalry to pop off if that actually were to happen. But it's just kind of been under the surface because Lakewood has kind of been the buffer between the two schools. But now, you know, what if Bosco Poly becomes a thing now?
I don't see why Jason Negro wouldn't want that game if what he's doing with this program is what he wants to do. Because routinely, Trinity League teams have come and played a Poly in a one-off or maybe a home-and-home or whatever it is. Routinely, some of those coaches have backed out of the second half of those home-and-homes. For a Trinity League team to win the title and then go play Poly every year after that, if that's not a message, I don't know what is.
Well, and it's worth noting, you know, this year is going to be the first year we have an open division for boys basketball in the state tournament. And it's worth noting, Poly Bosco certainly could end up meeting in the SoCal Regional of that bracket.
And they are already going to meet at the Nike Extravaganza at Mater Dei.
So Poly Bosco
is going to be quite a heck of a basketball game. So that's why I'm starting to see the foundations of this rivalry.
It certainly could happen, because I think having it in multiple sports that you're both good at always sort of pushes that stuff along, for sure.
Well, and the football... Go ahead, yeah.
We'll have plenty of time to talk about Bosco's basketball team when that comes along, but that is another story that's not completely unrelated to their football success.
Yeah. Well, their football success has been pretty statistical this year. They're averaging 40 points a game. They're rushing the ball for more than 200 yards a game. Their sophomore quarterback, Josh Rosen, has put up some pretty good numbers. He's throwing for over 2,000 yards this season, and he's a big kid. 6'3", 190, so he can get the ball moving in multiple ways. They like to run some option stuff, some stuff out of that shotgun set. But Poly will once again have a really good running back to tag. Number 6, Darren Walker, the senior, he's got over 1,000 yards this season, averaging over 7 yards a carry, and he's got 15 rushing touchdowns. They've got a bevy of good pass-catching wide receivers, but Walker is the game breaker. And it was Rosen and Walker who scored back-to-back touchdowns late against Notre Dame Sherman Oaks last week that has Bosco in this game anyways.
Well, and there's certain things to look at when you go into this matchup a little bit. Now, Bosco has certainly played a tougher schedule, and they've, you know, they're undefeated on the field. I'm referring last week to Mission Viejo, say that they have played a tougher schedule than Poly probably. But
if you factor in the Trinity League, I was surprised looking at the teams they played in the non-league. It wasn't what I thought it was, but that team obviously from Utah that they played, Sandy, fantastic.
Played them very close, and they won by a point, and they're way up in the national rankings. So that team that could have been an interesting game for Poly. They were probably not ready to make that trip back when they were supposed to make it, but obviously they weren't ready to give Poly the means to make that trip. That's a long story. Anyway, but certainly I think Bosco has played a tougher schedule. They're a little more seasoned, but when you kind of look at their results, they were not dominant in their win over Notre Dame last week, and they haven't...
They had to come back.
Yeah, they were up against it late in that game, and they're a much better team at home. They play a lot, but, you know, they get into the crowd and everything.
Right.
So we'll see those sort of things working against them, but, I mean, it's a comparable team to Mission Viejo, certainly, and we expect it to be another great game.
Well, what's interesting to me, I think the big difference was last week was a huge clash of styles, both in terms of the way the game is played, you know, the communities, the coaches, and everything. This week, it's kind of two very athletic teams who both kind of push the envelope a little bit in terms of what they're doing. They both take chances offensively and defensively. And, you know, the fact that it's at Vets, you know, it's two teams that are sort of right in the same, you know, the cities are neighboring. It's certainly not a team from 30 miles away like Mission Viejo. I'm really curious. It's kind of nice to me when Poly plays a team that kind of resembles itself in the playoffs, because I think you always get great football that way rather than when they're playing, you know, Mission Viejo and things can go south pretty quickly or something. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I mean, I think you're going to see if people score, I think they're going to be long touchdowns. I think you're going to see big hits on defense. You know, I think it's really going to be kind of a slugfest. And obviously, as a sports writer, that's an incredibly exciting thing to cover.
Oh, you should all be excited. If you're listening to this show, if you pay attention to Long Beach Sports at GazetteSports.com, if you're just a football fan, you need to be at Vets on Friday night, 7 p.m. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere. Before, during, and probably after, because we are all anticipating a close game, right?
Yeah, and you're not going to regret buying that ticket.
So get there, but if you can't get there, get back here, GazetteSports.com. We will have all the coverage because we got you covered.
We make it real easy for you to get all the new stories that we put on GazetteSports.com every day. Just go on the right side of the page, under the Facebook and Twitter boxes, you'll see an opportunity to sign up for our e-newsletter. And every day we'll send you all the new breaking stories and news so that you hear it first about what's going on in the LBC.
So that's the rundown. Those are your two fighters. The match is Friday night, Poly and Bosco. You know, the wide angle that we've been taking at some of these playoff games have been, you know, good timing, because this year it seems so apropos that Poly would be taking on a growing and emerging private school team that we've been talking about. That we did an article a few months back where
it's
it was just basically saying
year, yeah.
Private versus public, Pac-5 versus the Moore League, you know, the relationship between all of them, and then here we are talking about it again in what hopefully isn't the last weekend for Long Beach High School football. But does this game mean something for the Moore League and its relationship with the Pac-5? Does this game mean something for the future of Long Beach football?
Well, and you certainly would have to look at the quarterfinal as being that. I mean, we thought, mm-hmm. along with everyone else, well, 2 years from now, you know, or next year, the Pac-5 is certainly just going to flush the Moore League down into the Southwest Division, you know, get rid of those kids or whatever. And now you got a semifinalist. If you get a team in the championship, it starts becoming a lot harder to imagining Poly moving to the Southwest. So The question, you know, Raul Lara has talked several times about thinking that that the Pac-5 is going towards being an all-private school division. Certainly the moves that they made recently make it kind of feel like that. But what he's talked about is he thinks that Poly may have to go freelance and let the Moore League move down to a lower division.
Well, and let's talk about some of the options here, because it was thrown around a lot during the preseason. Well, you know, the Moore League just doesn't belong in the Pac-5 anymore. They just can't compete, and obviously Poly's trying to do something to change that. But as we saw, the other Moore League teams, as has kind of been the case recently, and then aside from Lakewood's recent runs to the semifinals, which have been great.
Wilson won, I believe, two games in 2004, and mm-hmm. Lakewood won those games. But other than that,
it's been pretty...
That's about it.
It's been tough. It hasn't necessarily been...
Lopsided losses.
Exactly. Pretty lopsided losses in many cases. But Poly being the one that kind of stands out, so they think maybe the rest of the Moore League should move down. But Poly, obviously, they're in the Final Four. They have right to stay. So talk about some of the options and what the process would be to go through that. Let's educate the people, Mike.
Well, first let's define what freelance is, because I think freelance, somebody might think something else. Freelance would be like Poly becoming Notre Dame. Not what Notre Dame will be in the ACC, but what Notre Dame is right now. Independent. Where they make their own schedule, they get to choose who they want to play, when they want to play them. Obviously, that's tougher with other teams being in conferences, in Notre Dame's case, and leagues in Pauly's case, but it would be much like Pauly becoming the Notre Dame of local high school football.
Right, and before we talk too much about what that would look like with Pauly being freelance, I mean, I think essentially everyone's in agreement that Pauly looks like they're still a Pac-5 team. The other six teams in the Moore League do not look like Pac-5 teams.
I think we can all sign off on that.
Yeah, everyone's not going to offend anyone
right
now. So,
essentially, you've got three options. Everyone stays in the Pac-5. The Moore League's second and third seeded teams continue to lose by 40 points, or Lakewood's case, I believe, 60 points this year. Until they get better, which, unless the school district puts some more money into getting on-campus coaches, kind of hard to imagine. So that happens, they move the whole league down, in which case right now I think you have to look at that being a disservice to the rest of the teams in the Southwest to have Pauly, who's a semifinalist in the Pac-5 down there. Or the third option would be, JJ, what you were kind of touching on, splitting them essentially, Pauly leaving the Moore League, the Moore League moving down to the Southwest, and Pauly remaining in the Pac-5 as a freelance team. You brought up, I think, the biggest challenge to that is who's going to play Pauly. You know, you're the last 5 to 7 weeks of your schedule, you're entirely going to be playing teams who are willing to play Pauly during the bye week of their league schedule.
And who's going to want to do
that? And I kind of do wonder who would want to do that.
Does Modern Day want to play Pauly? Does Mission Viejo want to play Pauly?
In between playing Santa Riga, Santa Margarita, and St. John Bosco?
Yeah, like, oh, right after that San Clemente game, let's go to Vets.
And that doesn't make any sense. More importantly, do those teams want to not have a bye week for their last 5 to 7 weeks going into the playoffs? Because you're talking about taking a bye week now in week 3 or 4 before the league starts, and then playing that game then. And, I, you know, for these teams that are in these powerhouse leagues, I can't really imagine San Clemente or Tesoro wanting to play, you know, Mission Viejo, Tesoro, Pauly to end their regular season.
Well, and let's look at it from Pauly's perspective, because then they're forced to just compete with the at-larges. There's no more automatic, you get top of the Moore League and
right.
you go
that's,
in.
And that's the question I think most people would ask you is, well, how do they get into the playoffs? Because there's guaranteed berths. So the official language from the CIF football handbook is, freelance teams will be placed in appropriate divisions, and then parenthetically I'd add, we're assuming then Pauly would still be in the Pac-5, and will be considered for the playoffs along with the other at-large entries in those divisions. For a freelance school to be considered for the playoffs, they must fill out an at-large form as their entry. Now, the Pac-5, like all other divisions, has 5 leagues. There are 2 at-large berths right now. So if you take the Moore League out, you have to replace it with another league. You got to move someone up. I'm not sure what league would want to move into the Pac-5 right now.
It would certainly, you would think it would be a smaller league, so maybe you'd have more at-larges in this hypothetical.
But the league has to want to move into it. So it's
and
difficult.
Is any league really ready for
so
that?
That's kind of
Are
difficult.
Are you really
to
ready for that?
The Moore League has to accept, I believe unanimously by their bylaws, Pauly leaving the league, and I'm not sure they'd do that. Pauly has to want to do it, and while Raul Lara has talked about that maybe being a necessity, I don't really think that that has the full support of everyone around that program, probably including Lara, because he doesn't want to build a schedule. I mean, it's such a pain in the butt to build a 4-week schedule for your non-league. Mm-hmm. Does someone really want to do that for 10 weeks? So, you know, looking at that stuff, then suddenly they're fighting for that 1 of 2 at-large spots in the Pac-5. I personally can't envision it happening.
Right.
My guess is we're going to be status quo, and the other Moore League teams are kind of just going to keep getting thumped. Because if Pauly goes to say, especially if Pauly wins on Friday and they end up in the championship, I can't imagine them taking that team out of the Pac-5.
Well, let's look.
And I can't imagine them taking them out of the Moore League.
And
so,
why would they really do that? And so let's look at some of our other options. And it might take a complete reworking of how the playoffs are done, but look no further than basketball.
Oh, the CIF already has a solution for this problem, Tyler.
Da, 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 da. It's almost as if, it's almost like the current BCS. It's like they won't look to their lower divisions for how to do a football playoff, and they're just palms up. It's like, well, how are we supposed to determine a fair college football champion?
Right.
It's not like our lower divisions do that.
It's like
it's hilarious. But and not to say that football and basketball are the same thing in the CIF, but there is a model in basketball where, based on school size, success, it's a big formula, you're put into different divisions. So the Moore League, for instance, has all those familiar favorite schools, but you've got they're spread across 3 different divisions. So Compton's in a different division. Cabrillo's at a different division.
Cabrillo's in 1A.
Right. And so those schools go, and you see them compete. Cabrillo lost a close game to El Toro, who's the 5 seed in that bracket. But did you really see them necessarily competing in the highest bracket? That's a building program. But they have an opportunity to see that playoff success. Compton will be a favorite in their division. So I think that a way to restructure it where you have your leagues and then, you know, you just can move them into different divisions and place them, as long as you have an educated selection committee to build those brackets, that could definitely work.
Well, and I think most, you know, what I really like about the basketball system, and I believe it's Rainer Wolf who put that together. My apologies if it was someone else. They put a lot of work into it. It's almost, you don't even really need a committee, because it starts with an enrollment number, which is going to put all of the more league teams in Division I, because mm-hmm. they're the biggest schools in California. Then you go by playoff success as a second component, and then as teams go 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, you know, Wilson, obviously, other than Lakewood, the last team to win a more league game playoff game has been 8 years, so they're going to see that, and they're going to start moving Wilson down, and you're going to keep moving them down until they get to a spot where they can compete. Now, the enrollment will cap them from moving down too far, but the playoff success is factored in, and I agree with you. I mean, I think it's the most equitable system. I think the amount of resources they've put, the amount of time they put into doing it in basketball, mm-hmm. it's hard for me to believe we won't see that in some other sports, because they've really fleshed it out. They're really troubleshooting it pretty thoroughly.
But you just have to be good with the at-larges, because there's a lot more of those type of selections in the division. There's less automatics,
right?
Which is not necessarily a problem. That's probably more fair for everyone.
And the reason why this new formula is the best is because it is the newest. Schools and their sports programs and everything involving high school sports is changing so rapidly with new technologies and money and all that stuff that we always talk about, that this is the formula that you need to have everywhere, because it is just the newest. It takes into account the stuff that is now changing the high school landscape. You can't just line up high school teams against each other without taking into account everything that from a private school to a public school to club stuff to, you know, what is really happening in the high school sports scene. And it's not, it's just not the way it used to be. Now, Mike, obviously you need to go out right now and buy Mike's book to get the true answer to this question.
Yes.
But could this season for the Moore League,
Football in Long Beach by Mike Gardabasio,
be the most historic football season, because it will change Long Beach football?
Say again.
Is the Moore League at a crossroads right now with where Long Beach football is going to end up 15 years from now? The way that Pauly's kind of separating themselves from the Moore League, and the Moore League going up against not just Pauly, but the rest of the Southern California high school football elite, is this season kind of the point where we're going to look back and say, that 08-09 run by Lakewood was really the last time anybody but Pauly did something, and now uh-huh. we just need to root and have it fun during the regular season, because the postseason is kind of just this far off, remember when we used to win postseason games?
Well, I'm going to say no, and I say this, you know, obviously all the schools know I love them, and certainly every school's got a sport that they're good at or sports that they're good at. It just so happens that other than the 07, 08, 09 Lakewood years and Wilson in 2004, it's kind of always been that way. You know, you have to go back to the 80s when the Moore League was in the Coastal Conference, which was not the Pac-5, you know, when other teams were competitive. And when we were there, you saw Milliken and Compton played for a championship, a CIF championship.
Mm-hmm.
But it was only in that bracket that other teams really had success. Now, Wilson had success in Division I in the early 60s. You can go to some of these other places. Jordan obviously had a run in the mid to late 90s of being good. But for the most part, it's hard for me to see it as a crossroads, because it's kind of instead just, you know, we're 1,050 miles into the same road is almost more what it feels like, you know. It's just kind of always been that way. And if you look at Pauly from 95 to 2008, it was always that way. I mean, they were that separate from the Moore League. Actually, this year wouldn't even be in Pauly's top 10 most dominant years in the Moore League.
So if you're Lakewood, if you're Milliken, if you're Wilson, are you, I mean, obviously city allegiances aside, are you rooting for Pauly to win out? Are you rooting for a Pauly championship? Does that help the Moore League?
I don't think that, if I'm coaching at Wilson, I don't want to be in the Pac-5 anymore. Because Wilson's a great example of a team that's got an on-campus coach, that has the financial wherewithal to help build a program that in a lower division could be successful. Mm-hmm. Milliken proved that they could do that. I mean, they won two CIF championships in the Coastal Conference. So if I'm at those schools, I'm going to prize what happens at my school above what happens to my league.
Obviously.
The best thing for their school would be to move out of the league. So if I'm them, I would have preferred Pauly to lose in the first round of the playoffs. You know, not to say that that's what they're rooting for, but I think it's undeniable that it would be better for the six other teams in the league to not be in the Pac-5, and the only way that's going to happen is if Pauly is also losing early.
Or if they're not in the Moore League anymore.
Right, which, as we mentioned, I just don't see how that happens.
And the Moore League's so competitive in all sports, it's just that football sometimes, and a lot of times, has been, you know, lopsided in favor of Pauly, and how do we fix that? And I think that it's got to be just the redistricting, which nothing's going to happen next year.
Yeah.
Let's just say that right now.
In the last 10 years, non-Thad McNeil coached teams and non-Pauly teams in the Moore League have won one playoff game in the last 10 years. You know, I mean, that's just where we are in terms of the equitability of the league with the rest of Division I.
Right.
So the question is, you know, does someone do something about that? I just don't really see what could be done. You know, I mean, I give credit to Raul Lara mentioning the freelance thing. That seems like the only thing that could be done. But even that, it's difficult to imagine how that would be implemented.
And I don't think everyone likes it. So I think it would have to be a full rewrite of how the football playoffs are done. And we'll see if that comes down. But that's got to be a top-down thing.
Well, that was Sports Night and everything you could possibly want to know about Pauly v. Bosco CIF Pac-5 Division I High School Football Semifinal, Veterans Memorial Stadium on a cold Friday night here in Long Beach. I can't wait. I hope you can't wait. We'll obviously have all the coverage here at GazetteSports.com.
Can I just say how happy I am to get to cover another football game with you?
Amen.
Because JJ was in the pyramid for the Long Beach State North Carolina game last Friday, and it was like it physically affected him that he couldn't be at a football game.
It's true.
When football was being played, I'm not kidding you, listeners. It physically affected him.
It's true.
It was tough not being at the North Carolina game, but when you're on a football sideline, especially in the playoffs,
football
you get over
just,
it real quick.
I mean, in terms of the interest level and in terms of our interest level, football is football. And high school football is the only football other than, you know, BCC that we get to cover. Their season's over. Now, Tyler this week is going to be on the road and isn't going to be able to be at this football game. So it's tough. So what I'm hoping for, guys, is December 1st, we can all watch a football game together.
I would much enjoy that. I would much enjoy that. We're not going to be able to do any of that without the sponsors, though.
Obviously, Naples Rib Company sponsors every single thing I do during my day from waking up in the morning to going to sleep at night. Thanks to them, go get your coupon for a discounted lunch or a discounted hand wash at the Naples Car Wash. McCarty's Jewelry, here for you since 1932, Long Beach's finest jewelry store.
Well, and hopefully there will be some jewelry being passed around in Long Beach pretty soon. Performance Vein Institute, I mean, your heart might need it for the last couple weeks of these playoffs. The Sleep Center now open at Friedman's Appliances. I mean, you're going to
be
stressed out,
that,
and
yeah.
Eventually when the season's over, you're going to need to take a nap. And you might be a liability to yourself and others going through this playoff
run.
You'll
get a liability balloon from
yeah,
Care Jones.
Go see Care Jones, State Farm agent. Oh, my goodness. These playoffs have me on edge. I'm nervous right now, and I'm not even going to be in town, and the game's far away.
And it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday, but it is week. I mean, we got to get out to practice, y'all. I need to see somebody hit somebody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to each and everybody, you and yours here in Long Beach and across the world. Obviously, it's been an up-and-down fall for us. If you have followed local sports and listened to this show, you know how it's been. And there's been times where we questioned whether or not we would be covering fall sports this far into November, let alone just getting out of October. But we had the Wilson Bruin water polo team get to the championship. We had some great golf and some great tennis out of the Moore League. Volleyball runs. How about Pauly's win over LaSalle? Lakewood got a win in volleyball as well.
St. Anthony?
And St. Anthony running all the way to the semifinals. And then obviously this football stuff. I mean, every time I think I'm out, Long Beach sports just pulls me back
in. And this Saturday, Tyler still won't be in town to see it, but if you could stop off in Fresno, we'd appreciate it. The Pauly boys cross country team will be running it in the state championships up there.
And oh my goodness, basketball season
just around the corner! Really quick,
we can't help but look ahead.
It's our last show before Thanksgiving. Can we rip around the horn? Everyone do one or two things they're thankful for?
Oh my goodness, I don't know that I'm ready for this.
I'm thankful to still be covering football. I'm going to go ahead and steal JJ's answer. Happy that we're...
Oh, thanks.
No, but obviously thankful for the listeners and for you guys and for my wife, Char, and everything going on with her. And JJ, what are you thankful for?
I don't know, man. I can't even build up to that list. You go, Tyler.
Let's see. I'm thankful for the fact...
JJ's ungrateful.
I'm thankful for the fact that you drove...
You stole my answer! How am I supposed to answer?
I'm thankful that I was at the Poly Mission Viejo game. I'm thankful for my iPhone. I'm thankful for a loving and supporting group of family and friends. And I'm thankful to all of our dedicated readers and commenters.
I feel like you're accepting some sort of award.
I'm used to that. I got my speech down.
I'm thankful for this turkey in my refrigerator I'm going to destroy in 2 days. I'll tell you that much.
I'm thankful for Mike's couch that I take a lot up of.
True.
All the time.
It's true.
I am thankful for everything that those guys just said. Also, I'm thankful for this show and an opportunity to talk about the city and the sports in said city that I love so deeply. For Tyler, for Mike, for JJ.
For JJ?
For everybody JJ. Involved at GazetteSports.com and the Gazette newspapers, thank you. And we'll see you guys in the stands this weekend.
We better see you in the stands.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Take care, y'all.